Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of rumradio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and rumradio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on rumradio.org.
My mom couldn't make it. That's my granddaughter, Claire. She's the only one in the audience. She's only 9 years old. What enthusiasm, huh? Thanks, Claire. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which is closed down, as like some of you know. The GSO, that's not the KGB, but the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the auspices of the Grapevine, that's the monthly meeting in print, has produced a work called One-on-One Sponsorship. What's fascinating and really interesting about this is that this is the first time this organization, which is the mother of all 12-step programs, has produced such a work directed towards sponsors. We've never had that before, or AA has never had that before, and I think it shows a turn in the philosophy, we hope. So we couldn't applaud that more. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation for us. Thanks, guys. Every little bit helps. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. They were recently told me they were grateful that I was able to submit some more work to them, except I don't think they're jumping up and down about it. Well, you know, everybody's an art critic. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country, so does the nation, so does the world. Most of the problems we have today are from latchkey kids. They haven't really gone away, folks. They're being brought up on the mean streets. Nobody's home. Can hardly afford. Both parents have to work. Who's watching the kids? The kids are watching themselves half the time. And what do we get? No correct principles. And then if you teach children correct principles, they can teach themselves. Unless they got that basic information, there's no holds barred. Harold also goes to the prisons, which we've been curtailed lately because of financial cutbacks. In the prisons, most of the time we find people with addiction, alcohol, and drugs, crimes of opportunity. We got career criminals in there, but they don't drink when they're on the job. It's a business to them. Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thank you for the introduction. I have just a number of very troubled families right now that I'm working with, and what's happening now, in addition to the kids not getting correct principles, they're also being exposed to a lot of violence and porn on the internet. And it is so destructive. I have one family, the little boy is 5 years old. When he was three, he accidentally came across some porn on his dad's TV, the parents are divorced, and he visits his dad on weekends, and he saw some images of women's behinds, and now he's 5 and a half. He just got kicked out of kindergarten for bad behavior. He's pulling down girls' pants and things like that. And he says all the time, I just can't get those images out of my mind. He doesn't say images. He says butts. I see girls' butts in my mind. I can't get rid of those images. So here he is, kicked out of kindergarten, and just very disturbed and troubled because he looked at porn 2 years ago. So... I also do marriage counseling. Half of marriages end in divorce. Half of divorces nowadays involve porn. So things are changing, and it's not in a positive direction. So I just want to encourage all you parents out there, protect your kids from that, limit their screen time, and put parental controls on everything. You have an obligation to do that, parents. Let me mention real quick that the reason this radio program exists is because Joseph has invested his hard-earned money in the program. The radio program and the website, rumradio.org, do not make money. They cost money. But we do this as our way of giving back. And Joseph, I just want to thank Joseph for putting together the website, rumradio.org, and the radio program on Blog Talk Radio. Let me give the phone number so that you folks that are listening live on Sunday night at 10 Eastern time, 7 o'clock, California time, I mean Pacific time, can call in. It's 949-534-0621. That's 949-534-0621. And what we're dedicated to here is recovery and the process of working with other people to really step up your recovery and deepen it. So thanks, Joseph, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Harold. It's always kind of you to mention that. Yeah, we do this as a public service. There's no money being made. We give our time, talents, and treasures to the benefit of the program. We're not AA. We're not NA. We're not CA. We're more like Paranoids Anonymous. That's where nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. And if you can hold on with us for the whole hour, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. No, it should be a good show tonight. Our guest tonight is Shira Goldberg. She's one of the hosts of the Addiction Show. It's going to be a real interesting story how she came about with her issues. So before we get started with the share, if you just hold on for a minute, I'd like to start with the third step prayer. I like to do that in the rooms of addiction. Usually we start off with a form of prayer, which is called an invocation. We invite in the spirit, and then we usually end with a prayer, which is called a benediction, a form of gratitude. But the third step prayer is found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I like using the Big Book because that's the original template for all 12-step programs. The 12 steps are found in there, the original 12 steps. There were 6 steps before that in the Oxford Group, and Bill W., one of the co-founders, expanded it out to 12 steps. The understanding is he sat down at a sitting, and I think the legend is like a half an hour. Basically, he channeled all 12 steps, which is kind of amazing. It's a spiritual work. There's no doubt about it. It's the repentance process. People don't get that, but it's the repentance process, how to put away the old man and come to the new, and how that's done on a spiritual level. And for some, It might be spiritual, but it's not religious. We refrain from any religion in the rooms, but it's okay for the individual to espouse whatever they need or whatever they want. This is an open, AA is open. This is Rum Radio, like I said, and we run our own show, which is, we use the same template, basically. It works if you work it. So this is the prayer, and it's the first prayer I give. It's one of the assignments when I have a sponsee. They start off as a prospect, a potential buyer, because we're selling hope, sobriety, and a better way of life. We're selling that idea. And if they purchase it and they agree to a certain set of understandings, they're willing to go to any length to achieve that sobriety, and that they've agreed that they've had enough. You know, that's a big deal in recovery. You come to the point, they call them it's a bottoming. You had to hit a bottom. Have you had enough? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough drugs? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough? Yes or no? Now, if I get two affirmatives on that, we go, and this is, I want them to get a home group. And, you know, that's not in the big book, but I think it's a good idea. It's a lifeline group. You get some guys' names. We believe men with men, women with women. It's not hard and fast, but it's easier to relate to the same gender. One, two, sponsorship is a fairly intimate relationship, and it could be easily misconstrued. So why put an extra hurdle in there if it's not necessary? But the agreement is, in any event, you work the steps. And that should, everything else should work out if the steps are being addressed in a timely yet thorough manner, my experience. And this is, and then for him to call someone in that home group, excuse me, every day for 30 days and ask permission to recite the third step prayer. And it does a couple factors, and I explain it to him. One, gets him used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Owie. Two, connects him up with his home group. He gets to know their name, and they get to know his name. The third step prayer encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, his first whatever, and chances are he will not. So it's helping to keep both of them in sobriety. And your sponsee is already into service work, which we find to be the key to long-term happiness and productivity. So this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Hallelujah.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
I like a hallelujah even better than the amen. You know, what we're trying to accomplish here is to make a better day. You know, I see a day in the not-too-distant future where a chicken can cross a road without having to give any validation. Harold, you processing that one, Harold?
Well,
I guess.
Some of the material goes over my head.
Oh, you got. Why the chicken doesn't have to get validation way across the road. Why does the chicken cross the road? Anyway. See, she is Jewish. She gets it. She does. They're really sharp. Okay, so, Shira, tell us, you know, before we get into what you do and keep in maximum service, we usually like, you know, what was like. I know you didn't work a regular AA program, but you're in maximum service now, and we find that's the key. But I like to go back to see what was it like. You know, there was a point where life wasn't – first, usually my experience, alcohol and drugs are real fun in the beginning. I like to quote Trish Murphy. you know Trish Murphy? When you're young and dumb – the trouble with trouble is that it starts out as fun. So tell us about the fun.
Oh, well, that didn't last long, but I went in pretty hard and fast. I never drank my whole life, and it just wasn't something I was really familiar with, and it wasn't something I did in my home, so it wasn't a big deal. And I felt like my ex-husband was really controlling. So after I was in the process of getting a divorce, I was like, I'm going to show him. I'm going to drink and have fun and do all the things I missed, all of that fun, good time. And I drank. And I remember going into one of those Sam's Clubs or Costco's, and I was going to get these muffins, and you know how everything's in bulk, so I was going to get 12 muffins, and I was thinking, I don't even know how to buy this for me, and so, but I was like, well, I could freeze them, and then as I was walking toward the bakery, I saw that's where they sold all the liquor, and I saw this huge magnum of champagne, and what a thought I had, and looking back in retrospect, I should have caught that as a huge sign that there might be a problem with how I was thinking, because I didn't see that huge magnum, which is two bottles of champagne. Two bottles of champagne is like, oh, I could share this with my friends. I immediately thought, who in the world could drink a whole bottle of champagne that size? So I was, and they were so cheap, so I said, oh, I'm going to buy one. And I'm going to use the flutes that I bought, and I've never used, and I didn't realize how little I could get in there, and pretty soon I was already into a tumbler, because that just made more sense. It was more logical. I didn't have to keep getting up, and eventually I downed that whole bottle. So I was off and running right from the start. And then I was 33. So
you didn't really mess before drugs, alcohol, none of that prior to that? No.
No. I mean, I got high on weed, like, you know, a handful of times in my life, but it wasn't, that was like a big, huge deal to do that. And so I wasn't really surrounded by that kind of stuff. So then I went back to the store and started going out because I used to love to dance. So I started going out to the clubs, and I would dance, and I would drink, and I just thought this was the best time ever. And then pretty soon, I noticed I was doing a lot more drinking than I was dancing. And then eventually, I mean, my downward spiral happened within one summer. So by the end of the summer, I wasn't dancing at all. I was just creating fights and drinking a lot, and I was pretty miserable, so I don't have a lot of
romantic notions.
So
you were going to drink, but you were going to dance, but you never got to the dancing part of it at the end, I think.
Well, no, definitely not at the end of the night. I could barely walk, let alone dance. So, and I went very quickly in my downward spiral. It's like I just gave it my all, and it helped me. I felt like it helped me clarify my emotions, and I could really tap into how I really felt, and no one understood me, and I was so unique and all of those things. And I didn't know anyone who I could really feel comfortable, and I didn't really see I didn't understand the process at the time. So, you know, now looking back, I was like, oh, I see every sign. But back then I was like, you know, it was just fun and it helped me clarify my thoughts. And then very quickly I was drinking every day, and pretty soon I was drunk every day. And so there's not a lot of good memories of drinking and partying like, oh, back in college, you know. So I went downhill pretty quick.
Were you drinking in the morning? I mean, were you, you know, you open your eyes and the first thing you do when you're doing a Bloody Mary or a beer or whatever?
Well, that took me a couple of years to get to that point. But eventually I met, of course, all of people that weren't that were questioning what I was doing. I got rid of those people quickly, and I started to become friends with other people that drank all the time, and which I just thought was the coolest thing. I finally found my people that drank and didn't worry about their problems or paying their bills, and I was like, oh, I found my space. And then I went with my friend, and we were going to go out for breakfast. And we went to a bar, and I was so surprised that bars were open in the morning. I was like, who would be drinking this early in the morning? That's ridiculous. and then guess who was drinking that early in the morning, you know? So, yeah, me and four other lost souls and my friend, you know. And then we'd go pretty early out, as early as we could get out of the house, like 11 o'clock, and yeah, we were already drinking. I mean, that was pretty much the point of our existence by then.
Well, my experience is what I would do is, like, I would drink at night and have, you know, and I'd be, I didn't quite start the hangover, so I would get to the bar and then have something to eat, and then the hangover would start, but I figured I had some B12. Or if I didn't eat and just started drinking again, I never had a hangover. So, the perfect cure for a hangover. You don't come down.
Yeah. I very rarely had hangovers. And if I did, they were, as far as my memory serves, which isn't 100% guaranteed. But I don't remember really having a lot of hangovers. And I would just say I would... You know, instead of passing out, I would just say I needed to take a nap. And I was drinking by that time about six days a week. And then I would take a day off just so I could, and I would sleep for about 18 hours and try to recharge my batteries and start it all over again. So, and then as my friends were showing concern and family members were showing concern, I just really completely offended. Like, how dare you question me? You don't know what I'm going through, and you're making me feel bad about myself and how I'm handling things. And I didn't want to hear that. I just wanted to numb myself and to run away, and that's what I did.
So you were isolating your family and all that. You were just kind of pulling away.
Yeah, anyone that showed any concern for me, I punished them by just, they vanished from my world, and pretty soon I created this world of complete chaos, and it was a very quick transformation for me. So I surrounded myself with other people that, you know, we made jokes like it's 5 o'clock somewhere. And when I first heard that, I thought that was the wittiest, most clever thing. I was like, I love that.
It's got to be 5 o'clock somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and it's true.
It is. And the sun is always over the yard arm.
I was thinking, and I remember when I felt like, oh my gosh, I just have such an epiphany about it. I was like, that's why we have all these different time zones. I was so into it.
It's for alcoholics, so they know where the next five is. It's funny.
Yeah, so I was like, if anyone was as logical about it as me, they wouldn't be questioning what I was doing, you know? So, yeah, I was pretty screwed up right from the get-go.
So you're isolating now. Were you isolating, or did you have a posse? You had a group that you hung out with,
oh, no,
other drinkers?
I wasn't an isolator. That came later, and when I realized I was having a problem. But no, I had a little group, very strong group. We always stayed together, and We went out to the clubs and out to breakfast, which meant drinking, you know, just my drinking buddies. And I, of course, I thought we were so close. They were my best friends. They'd do anything for me, and vice versa. And it was just about drinking. It was, you know, now, I mean, there's just, it's such an interesting situation how I know some of the people I used to associate with, they've sobered up, and some of them are still doing what they're doing and, you know, going to the doctor a lot more and not giving up. So it's pretty sad.
Some will never give up. That's what I've seen that. Some will die. You know, they keep lowering the bottom,
yeah,
which is kind of, it's an alcoholic thing. You know, people who are not addicted, you know, I belong to a fundamental church. They don't drink or do any, you know, smoke or anything. So they have an addiction program, and the people that run the addiction program have never smoked a cigarette. You know, like, what? You know, like that kind of deal. But that's how they do that. So they have a hard time. They have a lot of sympathy, but no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
But I find some people, you know, you could work with, but they've made up their mind that they would prefer to die than to stop.
Yeah, well, the guy I was hanging out with, he grew up Pentecostal, so, and he was gay, so I think that was such a dichotomy with his faith versus his sexuality. He just was never truly happy with himself. So I think that was where his sadness was, and my sadness came from a whole new world, not knowing how to survive on my own. So, you know, I mean, we were all wounded going in, so it wasn't like we were all having these awesome, successful lives, and then we decided to just check out. You know, we all met up right at the pinnacle of all of our disasters.
Interesting, like birds of a feather, you kind of just gravitated to each other.
Yeah, and it served us as protection. You know, if I was drinking, he drank more than me. If anyone has a problem, it's not me, you know. So it's a way to validate your little existence and to kind of separate yourself from acknowledging you're drinking excessively because someone's drinking more excessively. And it's just you create your own world no matter what you're doing. And especially when you're in that, for me, I would only hang out with people that were drinking all the time because I didn't want to have to deal with any reality, especially my own. So.
Now, how long did that go on? Now, this went on for years?
This went on for years. And I would, and then when I would be in situations where it was posing a problem or people would question me, I would just say, I don't have a problem. I can stop. So then I kind of turn into a binge drinker where I would just say, I'm going to detox myself. So I would, like, stop drinking for, like, 1 month to 3 months just to prove, really, I didn't have a problem. And so, but it was
also... I could stop anytime, see? Yeah.
Exactly. And I didn't realize all of this. Now I'm really involved in the recovery community, so it's different for me. But back then, I felt like I was going through uncharted territory with the rusty machete, just figuring it out day by day. And I didn't realize what this all was. So it was really embarking on a solo journey. And I was getting to the point where I did a geographic. I moved out of California, and that's when I really got into a lot of problems. So that was where I really hit bottom. It's, I guess, there's a bottom. So That's pretty tough.
So everybody's got a bottom if there is a bottom, if you finally get a bottom, everybody's got one. Now, some people take a bottom and go lower, take a bottom and go lower, and those are the folks that usually just won't come in unless they're at death's door or they're just not going to come in. But most folks have a bottom, and sometimes it's a high bottom, you know, where you know, they still have their home and their wife and the job and the car, you know. Back in the day, if you would walk into an AA meeting and you still have your watch, you know, we joke around, but they would say, oh, you still have your watch, you're not ready yet. So they dealt with the low bottom. They knew by that time, if you didn't have your watch anymore, you were beaten into a state of reasonableness and they could work with you. But if you had any resources at all, that it was harder to work with you because you still had a cushion. And I found that in a way that the people who have a lot of money and people who have a really smart use that as a cushion and have the hardest time to give themselves to a simple program. So what was your bottom now? So you coming to a bottom yet, or are you still partying?
No, I think I'm sober and a recovery coach now, and I've definitely turned it around, but
as far as your story goes, like, okay, you're partying, you got all your friends.
Oh my gosh, no, I bottomed. It's so interesting for me to say, like, what's my bottom? It's like you know when you skid a rock on a still lake and it keeps bouncing. That was my bottom. 7 times I was arrested I had an abusive relationship, and I just kept going. But by then I was just trying to kill myself with alcohol. I didn't care. I was broken. My spirit was broken. I just didn't think I could get out of it. I just felt like it would just be easier not to be around. Then I wouldn't be a disappointment to everyone and, you know, not create all these problems and not have everyone look down on me. And so it was really psychologically really, really disturbing that time for me.
I wrote that on the website. I have one of my sponsors is suicidal, and I put down it's the sincerest form of self-criticism. It's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and it's also considered a slip. And if your sponsee is dead for more than 3 days, it's a definite relapse. I try to make it a little light, but it's a serious phenomenon. There's no doubt about it. And I believe the alcohol pulls the spirit out of the body, and then all that left is being forlorn and dejected and just want a way out. I'm looking for a way out. So that's your bottom then. There you go. You're suicidal.
Yeah, I was suicidal, but I couldn't like just stab myself or something like that. You know, I was just like, God, you know, I'm not. And of course, I had the worst self-esteem at that time. So I was thinking, I can't even be strong enough to kill myself. So I have to take this, you know, this route, and it just wouldn't happen. And finally, after I've seen people overdose, I've seen people, you know, I've lost my apartment twice over it. I guess my final bottom was when I got my DUI, and I was in jail for 5 days. And for me, that was the worst experience I could imagine. And and what really scared me the most was, since it happened so many times that I was in jail, that I wasn't even scared anymore. And that's what scared me the most, that I could get used to this.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. And so after that, and then plus it cost me, I was just trying to get my life together. I was, you know, I was working full time. I had my apartment, and then I was saving money to get a car, because I lost my car. And then I got another car. I lost that car. So I was just up and down and up and down. And then I had some money. And then I was I actually got a DUI from going to court. And after I came out of court, I was so mad. I got drunk, and then that's how I got a DUI.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know, that's funny you should say. I've heard that before from someone else, where they just left. They got busted twice in the same day.
Yeah.
Which is
I have a friend
which is kind of amazing.
It is. I mean, I met someone who was high. He got relapsed, got high for not even 15 minutes, and he got arrested. You know, we were joking around, like, well, at least he could have made it worth your while. But it is what it is. And so for me, that was definitely my bottom, because everybody was getting sick and tired of me, and they were just, I was just exhausting. I was worse than any spoiled child. And I used to think of myself as like Veruca Salt and Willy Wonka. And I was like, get me out of here. And I'm swearing, I'm freaking out. And my friend said, maybe you should stay in there. And then I switched my tune. I was like, I'm sorry, just get me out of here. And then see, when you're in jail, it's the worst feeling in the world, because you don't know what time it is. You don't have anything to read. And for me, I'm an avid reader, so that was really tough, just to be with my own thoughts. That was more of hell than, you know, anybody who was in that pod with me. And I was really, and then I was starting to sober up, and I had all this time to think, and, you know, it was truly hell being with myself sober. That was the worst part of the whole thing. And then
5 days, so you were sober. It takes about 3 days to get the alcohol out of your system, water soluble. So there you go. You went through your detox on cold turkey, and there you are.
Yeah, and I was just in there, and I was in jail before when I was beat up by my so-called boyfriend, and, you know, he kicked my face in, and I called the cops on him 4 times here and there, and I kept getting arrested because I was drunk every time, and I wouldn't press charges against him, and then eventually my charges were dropped because he wouldn't press charges against me. So all of this is still following me to this very day. I mean, that happened 4 years ago, and I'm still, you know, it still comes up all the time, and it's I don't know how long it's going to follow me. So, but these are the things that happen when you make these choices. You know, it's like we have free will to make choices, but we have to live with those consequences. So,
yeah, it's a consequence. It's not forever, though, Shira. You can get, after 2 years in most places, you can get an expungement.
Well, everything is expunged except for the very first time I swore at a police officer. And I wasn't aware that was against the law. And so I was very free with the F word. And he arrested me for that, so I got disorderly conduct. So, you know, I've been a speaker at a rally recently, and I was telling my story, and for me, because it's my experience, it's the most traumatic part of my life, and I've learned so much, and I've grown from it. But when I hear other people's stories, you know, I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, I better stop talking, because it's going to sound like, you know, I have no weight compared to what they've been through. But you know, now I've come around, and I realize that my story was traumatic because it happened to me. So just like anybody else's story is traumatic, and they, you know, if they can get over it, but with, you know, for me it was therapy. I went to a psychiatrist. He put me on all these antidepressants. We kept trying, and I went to a outpatient treatment, and I was really successful, and I was, you know, well on my way. So it took a long time, though, for me to, you know, to really get it. And now, it's like when I talk about my story or I share things about me, people can't see it in me, which is good, but I can still feel it in me. You know, the hurt and the loss and the despair. So I have a lot of empathy now for people because it's not so black and white when you know it's wrong. You know you're hurting yourself, but it just feels like it's just a bottomless pit of despair. You just can't. You feel like there's just never a way out, and there is. I didn't have a burning bush moment, but I felt like I just built myself back up, and it took a long time because it wasn't just not drinking. That's just the beginning of my recovery. You know, it was.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it was just opening up how to heal, how to be still with myself and go through these painful memories and experiences, and how do I apologize when I've apologized 1,000 times for the same thing?
I think it goes like this. We call it demoralizing and incomprehensible. Was it incomprehensible demoralization? You know, that's the bottom right there. It's beyond.
Yeah.
We demoralize and and that's it. And the nice thing, though, about the program, I don't know if you're familiar, it says that we don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We could see how those experiences can help others. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we could see how those experiences could help others. I like to tell people, the bigger the sinner, the greater the saint, because the further down the scale you've gone, the more you can help someone else. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I definitely feel that it's given me such an insight and such an understanding of people making the same mistakes over and over again, but they're good people, and you know, it's like I don't judge people. Like I used to be very judgmental, and I used to be very materialistic and very classist about. I had a very classist way of thinking, and it's I don't think like that anymore. But I feel that no matter what, you know, we're all individuals, and my experiences have led me to this point because just as I made choices to get to that bottom, I've also made choices to get to this top. And it's, you know, it's a never-ending direction either way you choose until death. So I finally got tired, you know. I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I wasn't going to die. I felt like I kept popping back up. So it's like, well, if I'm going to be around, I'm going to turn this around. And that's when I started. But it was a long process. It wasn't easy. I didn't wake up one day.
So you didn't have the burning bush, you said, right? You didn't have this big spiritual experience?
No.
We call it, you know, in the program, most people don't, even in religious life too, in spiritual life, most people don't get a burning bush. Those are very rare circumstance. I like to think of it as a spiritual awakening versus a spiritual experience. And the awakening is more of line upon line and precept upon precept, here a little and there a little. It turns into doing certain things on a regular basis to produce a positive outcome. Now, what was it? Now, what's your solution look like? Okay, you hit your bottom, you're in jail, you've had enough. You're sick and tired, you're ready to make a change. What was the first thing you did?
Well, the first thing I did, I was still in the middle of hell, and that's what I call it. My addiction was my hell, and I thought I was going to die in some way, either a DUI or I was going to put myself in a situation where I'd get beaten to death or, you know, I just didn't know what was going to happen. So I made a promise to my mom, who is no longer with us, and she said, promise me you'll finish school. And on her deathbed, literally, and I said, of course, I will finish school. So I said, well, since I'm creating this whole world where death is an inevitable result, and that was my actual hope, I guess, I said, I'm going to finish school. So I went back to college for a year and a half, and I was still getting arrested and everything during this time. And I lost my apartment, and it was not a easy situation. And then I finished school, and then the fog started to lift, I just knew I wasn't ever comfortable in Atlanta. I wanted to go back to California. So I went back to California, and I finished school, and I was sober. And then now it took me a long time. I had to see a therapist for a couple years, and all of the medications that my psychiatrist was putting me on, I gained a lot of weight. And I said, well, this isn't helping my depression. So I just said, you know, I just need to learn how to, I really am an advocate for behavior modification, that I wasn't chemically imbalanced in any way. So I just felt I want to be able to just do this by myself, for myself. And then it started to turn around, and then I was really in a stronger place. But it's a learning experience, and I'm grateful I survived, but I'm not grateful that all of that stuff happened to me. I just have to work with it and learn from it. You know, it's like I do believe, and I'm taking it as learning opportunities, because that's the only thing I can do. I can't make it go away. I can't change the past. So I just have to look toward the future. But what I started to do is I had all of this extra time not being drunk. So I'm really like research. So I started to look up things that would be interesting to me, kind of like physician, heal thyself. So I started looking up a lot of books. And then, you know, there's amazing resources on the internet. So that's how I really started to get more comfortable in the recovery community. And that's where I really found myself. Just sharing my story, hearing other stories, learning together, just seeing the support system is incredible. And so I'm a real advocate, you know, of any group that can come together and support each other and help each other, you know. So I'm very grateful that I have the online community. And I also started a group where I live, and I attend another meeting, but I do Life Ring, not AA. And
What's it called?
It's called Life Ring.
Oh, Life Ring. Yeah, I saw that on your. What is that? Tell me about Life Ring.
Life Ring is it's like a processing group, and it's we have crosstalk. It's an hour long, about. So we don't have. It's secular. It's a secular based program. It's about sobriety, and that's the umbrella. It includes both addiction and alcoholism. There's no labels. It's very empowering, and I think the biggest sell is there's crosstalk. So there's an opportunity to share in real time, so to speak, and it's more prominent in this area because it's based out of Oakland, California. That's where it started.
It's like a therapy. It's like a group therapy kind of deal.
Yeah, it's like a processing group. So, people, you know, the format's always how was your week, and if you have something you want to talk about specifically, you're free to do so. And then, people are welcome to give you feedback or encouragement or advice or just to listen. So. That format really works well for me. And I started my own Life Ring group kind of by default, but that's okay. And then I went back to school, after I graduated college, and now I go to University of San Francisco, and I'm in the marriage and family therapy program. So I just finished my first semester, which is just phenomenal to me, and I did really well. So I feel very, very proud of myself. I actually feel like Rocky when he finally ran up all those stairs in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's how
I felt the whole day. So, but it's you know, it's
congratulations. That's really great.
Yeah, and I do my own show weekly, and it's all about addiction and recovery and everything in between and what resources are available. I want people, you know, of course, everyone's free to watch it, but a lot of people that are interested in the show are people that are already professionals in the recovery community or treatment centers. And it's really for someone who, like when I first came in, I didn't know exactly what I was looking for, but I knew what I was doing wasn't working. So I wanted to kind of see what was available. And I was really diligent in my research. And I know some people, you know, they need a little extra. So if I can provide resources or just, you know, expose them to different things, and you know, that might spark some interest, and then they can start doing some research on their own. So it's I do a lot of service, and as you know, the shows don't make money, but it's a labor of love, and I reach a lot of people, and I'm very happy to do it. I'm happy to be here on this earth, sober, giving back, because I remember feeling so alone at that time, and it's just the worst place to. That's the worst thing to feel when you just burned every bridge, and you're standing there, and you're like, I'm really alone. I created this situation, so. It's. I hear back from a lot of people. They're very grateful to know there's the resources available, or that there's a community at large that's not going to judge them and can kind of help steer them and point them in the right direction. And I'm so grateful for you both of you that I'm on this show, because it really encourages people to. Just see how the community cooperates and works together, because all of our goal is recovery, and no one can dispute that. So I was really excited to be able to share my story on this show, and hopefully it'll encourage someone else not to feel like the biggest loser, and to just see some glimpse of hope.
Well, hope is the key. I mean, in AA, well, I wanted to ask you, though, usually a lot of folks, when they come to that point with alcohol, they think of AA, I would think, you know, or, you know, like the house on the last house on the block, and then there's no fee to go to AA, so usually that's another motivation, too, you know, because you don't have to pay for it. How come you didn't go, though? You did go?
No, I did go. I did 150 meetings in the first 90 days, and I just didn't feel like that connection. I didn't feel like it was my place. But I knew my place was to be sober, and I needed to figure out how to stay sober. So that's when I was doing research and, you know, found the online community, the online recovery community on the Internet, and started finding
resources. What turned you off, Cheryl? What turned you off? You did a lot of meetings. That's a lot of meetings, 150 meetings. Sometimes they'd say 90 meetings in 90 days. It's not in the big book. That's a direction that came later. That's sort of like a cultural impetus that went around. It was grabbed onto, and it was the beginning where the meetings were becoming the solution, and that was one of the agreements. The next meeting is your most important meeting. Don't drink. Go to meetings. Repeat A and B. People who stop going to meetings are the ones who relapse. So the signal is going out. The meetings are the solution. Originally, it was that a sponsor, go find this prospect and start working on them. You would go get somebody. And then when they walk in now, people really aren't encouraged, right? Well, you know, few might say, well, you need to get a sponsor. Of course, they don't know what a sponsor is, or they have no idea the jargon or the culture. So they're kind of left adrift to try to figure this thing out. And the only way, they got to keep coming back to meetings. So eventually, I like to think of it, they're going to get the program of AA by the process of osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear osmosis?
Yeah, I tried to learn that way all throughout high school. Didn't work.
No, well, it usually does it because you have to – so you sit in enough rooms, you sit in enough meetings, and you're hoping that it's going to come through the floor, up your chair, up your butt, and into your head where you don't have really nothing to do. And then eventually, if the pain of life gets bad enough and you finally figured out the jargon, you might say, oh, somebody said something that was interesting. I can relate to him on a higher level, you know, because you're shooting craps then. Will you be my sponsor? Having no idea if this guy is qualified or not, but he had a really good story, so you're hoping that you latched on to the right star, which happens half the time that's not the case, and you don't know that you can get rid of this guy. So the information is really not as forthcoming. Did you find that too? Or?
Well, I mean, you know, I just think for me, it didn't resonate with me, and the reasons why are just, you know, my personal reasons, you know, my personality.
Okay.
or you know, I'm more of a evidence-based type of person, or I'm very structured as far as doing things for myself, not being told what to do, like read this page if I have a question. And, you know, so it wasn't like AA per se. It was just something I didn't really connect with. And I don't like to say, oh, AA didn't work for me, or because I wasn't working it, or, you know, it's just some people like yoga, some people don't, you know, I think to me,
sure,
it's pretty comparable. Like, I knew, but the one thing I really got out of it was the community supports the structure of the system, that it's a place where, it's like a place to go, and you can count on it being there. That's really helpful. So you don't have to feel you're all alone, and that's one of the most painful feelings of the situation that you create when you're a drunk or an alcoholic, or,
oh,
you know,
sure,
just lost in the wilderness. So I really love, and, you know, it's been proven that group culture is really affirming and beneficial, and it's very helpful.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
But there's a lot of other options and alternatives, and I just chose to explore those. And, you know, like, I found Smart Recovery, and that's based on what I'm learning about cognitive behavioral therapy. So, of course, that really resonated with me. And I was going to start a meeting with that here, and I got certified as a Smart Recovery facilitator, but then the LifeRing meeting just started, and they needed a convener, which is what they're called. And the format's very egalitarian. We all sit in a circle. You can't even tell who's really running the meeting unless there's a problem. That's a sign of a good meeting, because we're all equal. And you know, it's just different. It's just different method for the same goal, and that's what works for me. But I encourage and there's a lot of people that are in AA that go to LifeRing, because LifeRing's not so available. And LifeRing is, AA is available pretty much worldwide. You can, you know, ask in an airport, are you a friend of Bill? And people automatically, you know, you can
Connect. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's incredible. But as a global recovery community, I'm really trying to work. I think our purpose is recovery, and we have to work together. So I don't want any dissonance between, you know, AA people and non-AA people. And, you know, it's not a Democrat-Republican situation, and it shouldn't be created like that. And I'm definitely not a part of any separate, you know, any separate directions, because I see that we all share the same goal.
Sure. Yeah, our goal, you know, at Rum Radio is a back to a basic approach where you wouldn't have been able to get in a perfect world, you wouldn't have been able to go through that many meetings without going through at least the steps one time. And I think that would have been, you know, to grab you when you walk through the door and say, hey, I'm your sponsor. My name is Jane. I'm your sponsor. We're going to start working the steps and get you right through before you languish in the meetings and going, like, I'm not getting anything out of this. I mean, this is really cute, but I'm not learning anything. You know, like,
I had a sponsor. Yeah, I had a sponsor. We didn't really connect. And, you know, I just don't like to really get into my AA experience, except for it. I just knew it wasn't working for me, because I don't want people to say, well, you did it wrong, or you're basing all of AA on your experience. And I know it's my experience in one community at one point of time in history, you know. So I'm really aware of all of that, and I don't want to ever have someone say, well, I don't ever want to, like, say things, and then people are like, well, I was thinking about going to AA, but now I'm not because of what I said. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to have to own that. So it's an option, just like there are other options, and I'm comfortable with that, because I want people to explore their in abstinence and sobriety, and just give them the resources to say, well, here's your options. So you take it from there. Yeah.
Right. This is right. Information. This is the information. I like to say, well, you know, the agreement in the program is that there's no right way or wrong way of getting and attaining and maintaining long-term sobriety, because we're all so different. So there's no really set, you know, as soon as you try to cookie cutter this thing, you're going to get contention. So AA would be the first to agree that there's no one specific way. Now, some work better with others and some don't and this and that. We kind of let God be the ultimate challenger. Although I see AA for the most part is going secular. I see that more and more all the time, especially in this neck of the woods. More atheist, agnostics like that, and less and less away. Wrote a post on the Rum Radio. It's AA threatens to fire God, demands more benefits and less participation.
You are. I already told you this, but I love your humor. You're very clever. I'm very impressed. But you know, and I'm glad you said that part, because for me, the flip side is I don't want people to think AA is the only way. And if you don't fit in that situation, then you are pretty much screwed. You know, that's why I'm like, if you don't jive with this, you know, try this. If that doesn't work, try this. And a lot of people, they have AA, they have Life Ring, they do yoga. You know, I have a friend who does the yoga and meditation. He doesn't go to any meetings. You know, some people go to therapy like I did. I mean, so it's a very individual process. So I wouldn't want someone to feel like, AA, I don't relate, I don't connect, and, you know, they've never been exposed or aware that there are other options out there. I mean, to me, that would be such a disservice.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think information should be presented, and then let the individual make a decision an accountable decision. No one can think for someone else, but we have that sometimes, and that's just the way people are. It's control issues. But each person is an entity unto themselves. If that works, great. If it doesn't work, find something else. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, the goal is to attain and maintain long-term sobriety so you can be of maximum service to God and your fellows. And we find service to be a huge part of the program of recovery. But that's my experience. So that's a. Well,
mm-hmm.
Tell us more about your show. Do you want to? How do we get to your show? And you also do life coaching. So tell us about that.
Thank you. Okay, now we're in the part of the show that I'm really excited about.
Go right ahead.
I always feel like what I tell my story is like, wah, 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 cry baby.
No, not
but
at all.
It's part of my life and my experience and my strength and my hope and my future. But, yeah, so I became a recovery coach, sober coach. My website is GoldbergSoberCoaching.com. It used to be something else, but it was really, really long. And I just wanted to put my name on it since my name's on every mugshot out there. I was like, well, hey, let's flip that around in something positive. So,
really?
But the recovery coaching, I wanted to voice because I used to have a nonprofit for 6.5 years, and so I'm very well versed in social media and networking and speaking and collaborating. So I kind of just fell into a networking groove with the internet. So I started promoting myself, and I instantly felt very uncomfortable because I'm like, who am I? You know, I'm not some Dr. Phil or Oprah expert on this. It's just I have some tools, and I'd like to help people. So that's what I was working with, and I said, I would like to meet a lot of people in the field of recovery and feel connected and inspired and motivated. So I started in March of this year, the Addiction Show, which is theaddictionshow.com. That's the website. And then we have shows every Friday. I'm the host, and I interview people from recovery coaches to medical doctors to psychiatrists that are addiction recovery experts, you know, that everything from AA to meditation and mindfulness and Life Ring, Smart Recovery, Women for Sobriety, people that want to share their stories. So it's just a really great format for people that
I'm
interested.
Oh, I like that. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
that
good.
I'm interested.
I like that.
In.
It's mixed up.
Yeah,
you have
a
good mix in it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And because I feel much more comfortable gathering information and resources than talking about myself, you know, like on
sure.
my little soapbox. So that just it was just a more comfortable fit for me to interview people that I admire, and I think that could benefit other people if they knew about this person or this resource or this method or this approach. And it's been a really great journey, and I've just feel really blessed that I'm able to do this. And I have a very supportive partner, and he doesn't like it when I call him my partner, but he is. He's my he really helps me. And he's very encouraging, and he's very gentle, and he's very loving, and, you know, and so I came from an abusive situation to that. So every aspect of my life has done a 180. And he's very supportive of the show. He's very proud of me and my efforts and just how motivated I am to do everything that I do. And I feel so grateful every day. It really I really feel more like me than I ever have in all those years of destruction. And that's what it was. I was just trying to self-destruct.
You know, what I found is you're better off being yourself because everybody else has been taken.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I say something very similar. I said, I can only be myself because no one can do it better.
I like a quote from Luann Hill. She goes, I could stop pretending to be someone else and go back to pretending to be me.
Yeah,
I have
a post on there.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You have a post on what?
I'm radio about meditation. It's titled An Attempt at Thinking Not to Think.
Yeah.
There's some posts. I think you'd get some stuff out of it.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I'm really interested in there's different areas of there are different types of meditation and I think it's you know it just shows me you know and the greatest thing is whether something resonates with me or not, it's a resource and it could resonate with someone else. Number one,
sure.
I love that. But the greatest part of the whole thing with the addiction show is that even if you don't, say I give you 10 options that you didn't know about before, and you're like, you know what, none of those work for me. But at least it gets you thinking, if those 10 are out there, what else is out there? You know? And then you start taking action, and you're proactive, and you start looking for yourself, but it's a sense of awareness that you didn't have before, and you create that in yourself. And that is the most exciting thing for me.
The journey, not the destination.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just a bumper sticker mantra. It really is. I see the changes in people, and even if they can't see them themselves. And that is the most exciting part of my own recovery, when something will happen, and I can actually catch myself in the middle of it, handling it in a way that's respectful of myself, respectful of the other person, or you know, I'm not reactionary like I used to be. I'm more diplomatic, or I'm
proactive.
Much more happy. Huh?
Proactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not reactive. You're proactive. You take the lead.
Yeah, and to actually be in the moment and realize it, those are the greatest tasty savory morsels of my recovery. I just love that for my own personal recovery, and then to see other people, you know, when their light bulbs are going off and they don't realize how much they're progressing, and then they do. They're like, I'm like, well, you did that one thing you wouldn't have done, you know, 3 years ago, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, it's just electrifying. It's very exciting for me.
The Japanese call it suturai. It means being
suturai.
In the moment. It's the most it's the most powerful place you can be in the moment.
Wow, I'm gonna write that down. I get that because I really just appreciate those moments so much.
Well, that's all there is. If you're living in the past, it's about regret. If you're in the future, it's about fear, and you're missing out on being where you're at. I used to say, I used to live 2 feet from my body. I wasn't really there. I was either thinking about being somewhere else, and when I was somewhere else, I was thinking about being in the other place. So I was never really quite there in the moment. So it's quite an understanding
yeah.
to do that.
But you don't realize that how wonderful
no.
it is to really finally when you really do it. And it's something that happens in your life, and you're so grateful. Like I used to call it wishing my life away. I can't wait for this semester to be over. I can't wait till I'm off probation. I can't wait till I pay off all of these attorney fees I've created. I can't wait for, you know, it's like, what am I waiting for?
I can't wait until I'm dead.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I just can't wait until I'm dead. When is this going to be over with? I'm laying on my deathbed and going, oh, man, I should have spent another hour at work. Why?
And now I just try to enjoy every day, and I really do what I love, and it's productive, it's constructive, it helps other people sometimes. It's, you know, people love to be around me again. I love to be around people because I did start to isolate toward the end. And it's, you know, it's a very lonely experience, and it's just,
sure.
I'm so glad not to be that way anymore, because I'm such a vital, high-energy person. So for me to be alone by myself on the floor getting drunk and passing out and crying about it, you know, that really, I felt like I didn't grow up saying this is what I wanted to be when I grew up, and, you know,
really?
a drunk by myself.
Well, you know, you know, some people walk into the room and the room lights up. And some people light up a room when they walk out. So I can see you got. So, okay, so, yeah, we're going to close it up. So it's the Addiction Show. How do I find that again?
Look up theaddictionshow.com. And I have a YouTube channel, but it's all the information as well as some of the previous shows are on theaddictionshow.com. So easiest place to start. And for the recovery coaching, it's GoldbergSoberCoaching.com. And that's a great way to find me. And I'm always on Facebook, and I see you and laugh and get inspired by your posts. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's a good show. You're doing a good thing.
Well, thank you.
And
so are
your
you.
Efforts are, thank you. It's just great to see. It's just great to finally connect with you both and to see all of the great things that you do and, you know, how effective you are in reaching people and what a difference you make in the world. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I always hope that's the case. You never know. I've had one experience where a guy told me I handed him a card one time, and I've been banned from several AA clubs for handing out pass-along cards for Rum Radio. My name's, you know, I don't even have my last name, but, you know, AA guys, you know, people are kind of very, I don't know what's a good word, threatened. By me. And so I handed out to one guy, and he goes, oh, you gave me one 6 months ago. Pardon me?
Oh, I've seen that on a couple of posts on with you on a couple of posts, and I think you handled it very well.
I try to keep the humor, and I try not to get sucked in when we go into these you know, the ego battles, you know, I call them the ego battles. And sometimes uh-huh. I have very knowledgeable people, you know, but I stick to program and I try to keep my humor, and that always seems to you know, try to use wit instead of guile, and that usually will save the day most of the time. But anyway, I gave this card to this kid, and he goes, oh, you gave me one 6 months ago. And I said, oh, great. He says, I showed my sponsor, and he loved it. And he says, it's all over Dallas. I said, oh, well, I'm glad to hear that. He says, you know where you have about the suicide memory? He says, it's the sincerest form of self-criticism. It's also a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and it's also considered a slip. He said, when I read that it was also considered a slip, that's when I decided not to kill myself.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it blew me away, because it's kind of a
tongue-in-cheek.
Incredible. I know. It's a God chat. I've had quite a few of them like that. One of the ladies in one of the clubs that was banned, and she was in California, and she said, I saw her, maybe about a year ago. I was sitting at one of the clubs here, and she was right behind me. She said, "Oh, I've been in California." I said, "Oh, Jadis, I hadn't seen you." She says, "When I got there," she's a chronic relapser, and I says, "How'd you make out in California?" She said, "Well, I got a sponsor in California, and the first thing my sponsor told me was to check out Rum Radio."
No kidding. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, hooking up resources to people that need them. I mean, it's not a pissing contest for me. If you want sobriety, here's some options. Pick out what works for you and stick with it, and you'll be happier as a result. I think some people take it personally, so you don't. And
I know, and control issues, and the wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who can stand before envy? And that's a lot of it right there. You know, they don't like it because it's witty, it's informative, you know, and all that. And it threatens, you know, let me tell you, education threatens people.
Oh, I know.
Anyway, well, thank you so much, Shira. You've been a delight.
You have been a delight as well, and keep on doing what you're doing. It's such a great resource, and I really admire and respect you for it.
Well, thank you so much. Harold, any last words?
Well, I've really enjoyed listening to the program, and it is about getting back to basics and connecting with resources. And as always, I consider it an honor to be able to give back a little bit, and I know that we'll help a lot of people. There are a couple thousand people a week that listen to the archives here, so it's an honor to serve.
It is an honor to serve, and it's just an honor to breathe and be on this side of the grass and not smoke it.
Amen.
All right, you two have a lovely evening. I can't wait to listen to the show and to keep up with all of your activities.
I'll send you the link so you'll have the show.
Super. Okay, well, take care, and I will interact with you soon.
Sure, great.
Good night.
Well,
in closing,
I'd like to say Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages around the world. And we've had about between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. That's a little over 4 years. So remember, if you're looking for good sponsorship information and good all-around program literature, we recommend it highly. It's rumradio.org. And remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.